You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Everybody, ahead of the historic UFC 300 card coming up on Saturday, it's always a pleasure to be joined by the lead commentator of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, Mr. John Anik, because when we chat, the energy levels just go up for these events as the feedback continues to tell us. But I'm not sure we could do much more to elevate anticipation for this one, John, but we're gonna try, gosh darn it. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, Michael. I'm going to try to scale down the energy a little bit today as we preview UFC 300. I don't know if I would go so far as to say I'm nervous, but every time I look at the fight card and I start preparing, I get a little bit nervous for the monster that is UFC 300. And I think a lot of people would look at all the athletes, right? Don't need the pronunciation guide for this one and suggest that maybe the prep is easier. But it's almost like, man, these guys have done so much, these men and women. There's so much information on all of them that, you know, it's pretty overwhelming. But yeah, it won't be long now, my man. We're excited to get to Vegas.
So I'm glad we were able to do this. We weren't able to do it for $299. You're a very busy man. But I saw something pop up on Twitter the other day. April 3rd, which is not that long ago as we speak right now, the 15th anniversary of you calling mixed martial arts bouts. As everyone knows, April 2009, you started with Bellator. And now just over 15 years later, you're getting ready to call this card, UFC 300. You weren't on the call for 100, as many weren't actually aware until we did our rewatch party recently. You weren't on the call for UFC 200, but you'll be on the mic for 300. Like, what is, I know the nerves are there because you're trying to put this all into perspective for making this broadcast the best it could be for the fighters, but what has this build been like for you? Have you been sort of reflective about how far you've come in this space, or is this, I guess, Bill Belichickian where it's, we don't look back, we don't look forward, it's on to 300.
Certainly not thinking about my place in all of this. I was thinking a little bit about UFC 100 back in 2009 because we covered that. It was ESPN MMA Live at UFC 100, but I had a flight to Aruba for my then girlfriend's brother's wedding, and I canceled that flight because I thought career-wise it was very important for me to be at UFC 100 with ESPN, and I almost cost myself a marriage and three children out of all of that, you know. But yeah, the magnitude of these events certainly is not lost on me. I was in the building for 100 and 200, but wasn't working the fights, calling the fight. So I'm very excited to call UFC 300. And health is wealth, right? Like, I think it's idealistic for any of us to suggest that we're going to be there at UFC 400 in 2032. So I'm very thankful to be healthy, at least right now, a few days out, and very excited to call UFC 300. Yes, focused on these 26 athletes and all the other bells and whistles that will come with this live event April 13th.
If I told that, I know you don't want to make it about yourself, but come on. If I told that 30, 31-year-old guy calling the first season of Bellator, being on UFC Live, hey, in 15 years, John, you're going to be the lead man for UFC 300, whatever this is going to look like, would you believe me?
Certainly not. Certainly a couple years later, in 2011, I had that dream and would have been of a mindset and confident enough to think that maybe I could ascend to that seat by that point in time. But Bellator won in 2009. I thought Bjorn Rebney had the wrong guy. I was so anxious. I had called boxing before, but never mixed martial arts. And pretty quickly, working with Jason Chambers, a jiu-jitsu guy, thankfully, you know, I found my comfort zone and I still stay in my lane 15 years later. So it's crazy to think about all the ups and downs. But back then I would have been like, come on, I'm calling American football. I don't even know mixed martial arts well enough to be calling this fight. Never mind anything 10, 15 years down the line. But oftentimes I find myself being the oldest man in the room, which is the case in this interview room right here, right now. And, you know, I don't mind, I guess, any wisdom and white hair that comes with it. But oftentimes I'm the oldest guy now these days.
Not by much, though, man. Like, it's weird that I'm starting to feel that way, too. It's a weird feeling. I feel like when I go to the gym and stuff, like, I'm the oldest dude in the class, like 99% of the time. It's so bizarre.
How old are you?
41.
Yeah, big difference. You know, I'll be 46 in July. But nothing in terms of age-defying products yet. But at some point, I'm sure we're going to be shooting ourselves with testosterone replacement therapy, maybe get a therapeutic use exemption at some point in time. But no, I mean, I think at some point when I got that TRT flowing, maybe I'll be a beast again. But right now I'm just an old man. You know, the level changes are tough with the children.
Oh, I can understand that. But you'll be ready to go for 300. You get the usual legs of the pay-per-view tripod. Joe Rogan and DC will be sitting there as well. And this card is absolutely ridiculous. And as you know, being around this space, the UFC is the leader of the pack. We cover them a lot. We comment and we give opinions in the media space on the good and the not so good. But in my opinion, and I've been saying this for a while, top to bottom, this is the best card in UFC history. No notes here. But as we're just days away, do you agree? Best card on paper of all time here?
Oh, yeah. And I don't even think it's hyperbolic to suggest as much from a guy who, you know, gets his paycheck cut by the company. I think, honestly, when I look at this fight card, I'm looking at 10 or 11 pay-per-view co-main events and two pay-per-view headliners. It's absolutely nuts, man. And sometimes at this point of the week, right, I feel like I'm repeating myself when I say something like Davison Figueiredo is going to make that walk at fucking 3:30 in the afternoon, Mike. That is crazy to me that a fighter on his level is going to walk out, and hopefully we're at 60, 70% capacity at that point in time. And I don't know what time the first fight is, but to have fighters of this quality, future Hall of Famers competing in the middle of the afternoon, it's pretty unheard of. This card stacks up with any other UFC 299, 200, 100. Most people think 299 is the best card they've ever seen on paper. And at least for me, in terms of the cards I've been assigned, 299 was the best until this fucking thing. You know, this is a joke. Like, we could turn this into a comedy hour right now. I mean, Holly Holm and Kayla Harrison are going to be competing at dinner time. It's nuts.
It's freaking crazy. This was a bit of a tricky card to put together, as Dana White has told many people along the way. And I don't envy those individuals for trying to assemble this lineup. But to me, UFC 300 was an idea. And it was sort of like when the concept of Fight Island was an idea, right? Because everyone had their ideas of what things could look like. We thought the octagon was going to be on the island with waves crashing down. And the expectations rocked the charts that it almost put the UFC in an unfair position. And then the main event announcement was heavily suggested to be this fight that would blow everybody away. And when it was announced, because the expectations were so high, and I guess the timing of it, it was met with sort of, yeah, this is a great fight, but is it 300-y? And for me, I was just excited we had a main event so we could stop freaking speculating. It was fun to talk about for like a month, but once we just kept getting asked about it over and over again, I was just ready for that part of this build to be done. But what was your reaction when Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill was announced as the headliner for the light heavyweight title?
Well, Dominic Cruz has a saying that he goes to, and there are a lot of different variations, but expectations essentially are resentments in waiting, right? And when you have lofty expectations, especially for a card like UFC 300, and it doesn't necessarily live up to what your vision was, you know, you can have some resentment, right? For me, I'm in a tricky position as the play-by-play voice of the UFC, right? Because people will put an asterisk next to anything I say that defends the UFC 300 main event, right? So it's almost better for me to like spin it back to you and be like, bro, Jamahal Hill is going to go for it. This main event is unbelievable. People don't understand the extent to which Alex Poatan Pereira is already a superstar. Like, this man walks into a building and people turn heads like it's fucking JFK. There's something about this guy, and the fact that at 9-2 as an MMA pro, he's already a two-division UFC Hall of Famer, two-division UFC champion and future Hall of Famer is insane. So Pereira certainly deserves to headline this card. You know, Jamahal Hill skill-wise is criminally underappreciated. So for me, like, my only, you know, question mark with the main event is Jamahal Hill's Achilles, which he intends to, you know, confirm to me, I'm sure at the fighter meeting, that it's 100% good to go, all systems go. So I think the main event's fantastic. I'm really excited for this fight card. And Charles Oliveira, Armand Sarukyan's probably the most intriguing fight for me. But dude, it's just one main event after the next, man. I told you earlier, I'm getting nervous.
Yeah. And The announcement, like, because I remember we were doing our watch party for, I think it was 298, and we got Dana went on social media and announced it. I was like, because I've been saying, even heading into 2024, once Alex won the belt, I was like, heading in 2024, at worst, fifth most anticipated fight that they can make right now is Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill. I was so in on it. it was just, again, the timing, like they're going, they announced they're going to Rio like 4 hours before they made this announcement. And I heard that that was going to be the main event for that. But, you know, we got to mix and choose. We got to make 300 what it is. I love this fight. I can't wait to see it. And like you, I have so many questions about it. And it's mostly on the Jamahal Hill side, because as you know, the amount of time it takes for athletes to bounce back from an injury like that is unbelievable. It's usually a year before you can even start thinking about coming back. But apparently Jamahal Hill is a friggin' freak of nature, because he's come back, what, 9 months after suffering this injury and stepping in to fight Alex freaking Pereira? Like, it's crazy. So I know you mentioned the fighter meeting and all the questions surrounding it, but pretend I'm Jamahal Hill. I'm sitting down, chip on my shoulder, cock of the walk, feeling so confident. I've already changed my Instagram bio to UFC champion. What are you saying? What are you going to ask me right off the bat? What's the first question you ask me?
Jamahal Hill?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, certainly at that point in time, he's already done his media day. He's already done a shit ton of interviews, right? I will have the Achilles information at that point in time, you know? But I'll try to figure out a creative way to ask it. I'll probably say, hey, would you be better in July than April? And he's going to say, no, not necessarily. Definitely not. I'm ready to go. I feel 100% confident in the Achilles. I moved to Vegas. I leaned on the UFC PI. And he's an American athlete who has a great chance to go out there and knock out Alex Pereira. What would the betting line be if Alex Pereira was fighting Magomed Ankalaev? Jamahal Hill's plus 110, right? And that's a tremendous lens to look into when it comes to this fight, because a lot of people feel like Alex Pereira is going to win this fight. A lot of people see value on him as a slight minus 130 betting favorite because of a few different angles, but maybe the Achilles is one of them, you know? Well, Magomed Ankalaev's the other guy, and I wonder what fan responsiveness would have been if that was the challenger here. And you laugh. What? Because that wouldn't have been an appropriate UFC 300 headline? Is that why you laugh?
I'm thinking about the reaction to it more than anything, because it wouldn't have been great.
Well, there you go. Right. And I think a lot of that speaks to just Jamahal Hill's willingness to go for it and his style. Not that Magomed Ankalaev doesn't go for it. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ankalaev and Alex Pereira fighting at UFC 301, depending how things go at UFC 300, especially because of Jamahal Hill's penchant for going for it. You know, I can go one of two ways, you know.
Wait a minute. You think this could happen? 3 weeks that he bounces right back? I know he says it and wants it to happen. But if he goes out there, they have a pretty chaotic first round. Like you said, Jamahal Hill's going to go for it. So hammer and tongs are going to get after it. Pereira knocks him out like 4 minutes, 15 seconds of round number one. You think he's going to turn right back around? You could see that happening?
Well, I think Alex Pineda would have to be almost scratchless, Michael, to turn around and fight in Rio. But I do think that even dating to his UFC debut, there's a prize fighter in there that felt like he could come to the UFC and realize financial freedom pretty quickly. And certainly what a great job betting on himself for Poatan, right? But he's got two young boys to support, and he's done that in a major way, right? Best way to make money is to defend the title, you know? And I think I would assume a lot of these paydays for Alex Pineda as a pay-per-view point accruing champion in defense are huge paydays. So we'll see how it goes. I don't expect him to be scratchless, but far be it for me to doubt Poatan, especially before I see him here in a few days.
Oh, man. That'd be frigging crazy. That'd be nuts. Hey, you never know at this point. You never know. Nothing surprises me anymore. Like, I feel like it would surprise me, but in the end, it wouldn't, which is just what the UFC is and what the sport is in 2024. More about Jamahal Hill, the confidence, the IG. We just talked about, the last time we spoke, we talked about a challenger coming into a fight with overwhelming confidence, to the point where people are saying he better win or else this is going to be a really bad look for him. And Jamahal Hill, like I mentioned earlier, now on top of that, he's got the massive chip on his shoulder because he feels like everybody's doubting him. He feels like no one is giving him any respect for what he has done. I know he is shit all over the MMA fighting global rankings, seeing where he was ranked after beating Glover Teixeira. But what have you made of this style of build from the challenger? He's never been short on confidence, but he's certainly taking this to a different level, which I feel is a very interesting approach. Calling Alex Pereira an easy fight, which is wild to me. I love it, but it's wild.
Well, you know, my former broadcast partner, Brian Stan, always says self-belief is just the most important thing when you're trying to be pursuant of anything important. So I love Jamahal Hill's self-belief. But what I really love, bro, is the athleticism, a little bit of that American arrogance, right? He believes this, and a lot of people like me, just MMA observers, right? If I'm a professional in the space, fine. But just the MMA fan in me really does feel like he's underrated in terms of his application of that athleticism across all of the different mixed martial arts. He's a willing grappler, outstandingly gifted striker. I do think he's got a little bit of that death touch as well when it comes to his punches, you know. I just wonder about the durability, and he certainly answered a lot of cardio questions in the Glover Teixeira fight. But he is dealing with a guy who I think draws rave reviews for being like the hardest worker in the room. I mean, Alex Pereira has a distinct appetite and passion seemingly for acquiring MMA knowledge. And he's been in the gym improving like every step of the way. While I think Jamal Hill's been doing a lot of work recovering. So it's a fascinating fight, you know, and I think the betting line, as I mentioned earlier, speaks to just how close it could be and how close it is on paper.
The enigma that is Alex Pereira, John Anik. If he goes in there and does what everybody thinks he's going to do, at least just amongst the MMA community, because even Jamal is reacting to how people are seeing this fight. Alex Pereira just goes out there and beats Jamal Hill to close the show at UFC 300 and gets a big finish. He's already broken the freaking sport. He's already accomplished so much in such a short amount of time. Like, where does this conversation go after doing this at UFC 300 outside of, ooh, can he turn around at 301?
So let's table the 301 stuff for a second, you know. I mean, Hunter Campbell could hear that and be like, yeah, there's no way we want to preserve him for like 304 or some big plan that they have. Now, I've done a lot of media leading up to UFC 300, and three times to this point, I've been asked about Alex Pereira moving up to the heavyweight division. And I don't know what his goals are in terms of trying to realize a title in three different divisions. You know, I think a lot of his goals are trying to defend titles as many times as he can. He's 36 years old. And make as much money as humanly possible, not necessarily move up and, you know, fight a giant like Tom Aspinall for the interim UFC heavyweight championship. You know, what are Alex Pineda's goals? I think they're light heavyweight title defenses right now. So why not try to pluck off a couple while you're in shape here in a span of 3 or 4 weeks? So who knows? The world is truly his oyster, right? I was not quite aware of just how big a star he was until I saw him walk out in Toronto. And I know Canada is rabid when it comes to MMA, but my gosh, man, this guy's ability to resonate across like the globe and all these MMA fans is just crazy. And he hasn't even headlined UFC 300 yet.
It's crazy. What a run it has been for this man. And I know, you know me, John, I ain't asking you about Alex Pereira moving up to heavyweight. There's enough of these. Enough of this. I want to see him run off a bunch of defenses at 205. Enough
well,
is enough.
Well, let me just say,
too
I'd
quick.
Rather see him go back to 85. And some Ooh. Suggest he is wont to do that to fight Adesanya. If Izzy's the champion and there's an opportunity for Alex Pineda to not end that series on a loss, I certainly think that he would jump on it. Now, he might sit here and tell you at this point he's put on too much muscle mass, but he's just such a mentally forged individual that I would not put it past him. But yeah, the weight cut sucks, and hopefully he's buried it for good. I agree with Josh Barnett. I think he said to Ariel Helwani earlier this week, no more cutting weight. I agree.
My hope is whatever happens here, we get some semblance of normalcy at 205 pounds, because it's been a while since you've had that. So hopefully that's the biggest thing we get out of this, is that this starts the train of not flip-flopping titles and vacations and all that stuff. We could just focus on the division moving forward, title defense, title defense, title defense. But let's go to the co-main event. Historic title fight, John Anik. Zhang Weili versus Yan Zhonan. First all-China fight in the UFC for a championship. Zhang has looked at peak, just peak right now. Unstoppable. And Yan Zhonan just quietly doing her thing to get to this position. Sneaky good. Very intriguing co-main event, is it not?
Great chance to be fight of the night. If you go back and watch the 2023 UFC year in review, Chael Sonnen, Daniel Cormier, and I were all asked to pick our dream fight for 2024. And believe it or not, Mike Heck, my dream fight for 2024 was Yan Zhonan challenging Zhang Weili for the UFC Strawweight Championship. So I think that would speak to my enthusiasm for the fight. And a lot of it speaks to just how excited I am for the challenger, who has methodically built herself in the UFC up to this point. She's an offensive fighter. She has no problem playing the heel in this China versus China situation. And I think she's going to embrace the moment. I think they're going to absolutely go at it. And they're both just great athletes, five tool players, as we like to say in Major League Baseball. And I can't wait for the fight. I think they're worthy of the showcase. You know, we saw Joanna Jędrzejczyk as champion get a lot of shine and rub being on Madison Square Garden pay-per-views and Conor McGregor pay-per-views. I think Zhang Weili and Yan Xiaonan both deserve to compete at UFC 300. So my dream fight of the year is happening here, I guess, early second quarter.
Well, you got your dream fight, and I'm getting mine right before that, because for 3 years on our matchmaking show, anytime Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway fought each other or fought anybody, my suggestion was, can we just do Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway? Like, let's just do it. This is fun as hell. I want to see this. Volkanovski's the champion at 45. You know Max ain't getting another shot at this point. Let's just have him go up and fight Justin Gaethje. And here we are, John. We're so close to this fight happening. This fight is my everything. I've been waiting for this one. I couldn't get Dominic Cruz versus Marlon Moraes. That was the previous one from like 2016. Yeah. This is my new everything. We're getting it for the BMF title. The amount of people, John Anik, who continue to tell me that Max Holloway is about to get run over by Justin Gaethje is unbelievable to me. I think this fight's going to be so competitive. I think it's everything we thought it was going to be on paper. I just don't understand why people are immediately just counting Max Holloway out of this fight.
All right. So I feel like both of these guys should be challenging for the undisputed title right now. I want to see Ilia Topuria versus Max Holloway, and I do want to see Justin Gaethje versus Islam Makhachev. And I think in a meritocracy, that's really where we are at, right? And I don't know if that adds intrigue to this fight or not, but gosh, man, it's just an insane matchup. And I hate when sort of commentators like me say, oh, I hate when one guy has to lose. But is this not the fight in which you really don't want to necessarily see a loser? And maybe we'd be okay with an epic draw. You know, Justin Gaethje competes close to his natural weight. Max Holloway looked absolutely enormous when I saw him a couple of months ago. So I'm intrigued to see the weigh-in. I'm intrigued to see, you know, where these guys are at on fight night. But you talk about bulletproof matchmaking, man. Just excited to see how they're styles match up. Couldn't be more fitting that the BMF belt is on the line. I just hope that it's not like the most violent fight in UFC history because of the championship stakes in terms of the undisputed title pictures respectively in their divisions. But it's a dream fight, man. Like, it really is. It's a dream fight. And I actually thought it was going to headline UFC 300. And ironically, in terms of expectations and resentments and all of that, if this fight was announced as the main event initially, fans would have gone nuts. So,
completely agree. And also, I also said that no matter what the main event was, if they announced it along with that announcement, it would have gone over like Rover. But again, I don't envy those guys for trying to put this freaking card together, because just the expectations, just the idea of UFC 300, impossible to reach that place, if you will. But this is super interesting for lightweight, because you got this fight, you got Tsarukyan versus Oliveira. Dustin Poirier just finished Benoit Saint-Denis at UFC 299. He's had the year of years, in my opinion. Everything he's done this year has been A++. He might be in line for the title shot. Availability and timing can be your best friend in this sport. Do you feel like we're in the middle of a mini tournament right now? Like, because I'm with you. I thought Justin Gaethje was definitely going to get the Islam Makhachev, but you can never play definitelys in this sport, John, as you know. So do you feel like the two winners are going to fight? Like, are we just going to have to wait and see on April 14th before we could kind of predict this thing? What are you feeling right now?
Well, one thing I feel pretty convicted in saying is that this version of Justin Gaethje, whether he beats Max Holloway or not, is the very best version of Justin Gaethje. I can't overstate how big those back-to-back wins over Rafael Fiziev and Dustin Poirier are for Justin Gaethje. I think this is the best version of himself. I think this is the version of Justin Gaethje that could actually challenge Islam Makhachev and become the undisputed champion. But as you well know, the champion is going to control the cards and the calendar. So if Islam Makhachev wants to compete in a certain month, and that month is June, then you're right. Availability is a good fucking ability to have. So I don't know what they're going to do, you know, but I think when you look at this fight between Gaethje and Max Holloway, you know, the expectation is that the doctor who does the stitching is going to be needed. So I don't know that, you know, June is realistic for whoever wins this fight. But do I have an appetite for Max Holloway against Islam Makhachev? Absolutely. Right. Do I have an appetite to see Poirier against Islam? Absolutely. Gaethje, I think, leads the dance right now for me in a meritocracy. Charles Oliveira and Armand Tsarukyan. I mean, this is the toughest division in sports, Mike.
Hell yeah. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Even Max Holloway versus Islam Makhachev would rule too. I wanted Max. Yeah. When it was dangled in front of us, Max Holloway versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, I was all in.
There's Max.
There we go. There he is. Best boxer in the UFC. What a freaking performance. I'm sure you've been asked about this a bunch, but I'm going to ask you about it, and maybe I'll put a different spin on it. Bo Nickel on the main card. People up in arms about this. John, I defended this. It's not that I like fully defended it, but I understand where the UFC is coming from, especially when you have the original layout of the main card was Saruki and Oliveira kicking it off. Then it was Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. Then Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. And I was like, this is perfect. And everyone's like, why are you saying that? It's so dumb when you have all these other fighters who deserve to be on the spot. We don't know what's going to happen in these fights. We could be looking at three go-the-distance title fights. We don't think that's the case, but it very well could happen. We need something that is going to be quick and simple. And I'm not saying this as I'm just saying Bo Nickel is just going to run over Cody Brundage, because Cody's a dog, and maybe Cody has a great night. But either way, no matter how that goes, that fight's not getting out of the first round, more likely than not. You got to sprinkle one of those in there somewhere. And I know it's about trying to get Bo Nickel over, but we just want to get to Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway at that point. So I love the initial layout. I think it's cool to have Bo Nickel on there. I think if there's one fight that you can predict is not getting out of the first round to set us up for these three big fights, it's Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. So I was okay with this, and I don't understand why people are so mad about it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, certainly the forecast for maybe something quick or explosive is maybe part of the equation. But if Cody Brundage extends Bo Nickel, who is a minus 2,500 or so betting favorite, that becomes just crazy television in its own right. I've said this repeatedly, so I'm apologizing if people have heard me say this, but there's a certain electricity that some fighters have. And when Khamzat Chimaev made his UFC debut and fought twice in a 10-day span on Fight Island in 2020, there's nothing like it. Like, there's nothing like Khamzat Chimaev fighting, right? There are very few guys who have that type of electricity, for lack of a better word. And I've even mentioned Raul Rosas Jr., this fucking confident 18-year-old kid. He's got a little bit of that electricity as well. And I see you turn and look at your dog or your procreated child or whatever you're looking at. Bo Nickel deserves this, right? We have a fight card. Everybody deserves to be on fucking pay-per-view, right? Does two-time Olympic gold medalist Kayla Harrison not deserve to be on pay-per-view? Calvin Kattar and Aljamain Sterling aren't even the featured prelim. All these men and women deserve to be on pay-per-view, right? But there's just a handful of guys, right, that – and Dana White could speak to this, right, because he and I are aligned when it comes to Khamzat Chimaev. There's just something nuts about that guy, you know? And he's still undefeated, by the way. So, yeah, Bo Nickel, what, 5-0? But I think he deserves this opportunity, and I just think that the internal metrics and the numbers suggest that that people really give a shit about Bo Nickel. And, you know, we'll see what Cody Brundage has to say about all that.
Yeah. You think Aljamain Sterling and Calvin Kattar are mad that they're not – that Bo Nickel's on the main card? No, they don't care.
Do you think Davis and Figueroa? I mean, right? Like, this
dude's
is
gonna be
decorated.
He's going to be crushing pizza by like 5 o'clock. What, Vegas?
Davis and Figueroa, you know what he did? And shout out to Cody No Love Garbrandt as well. But Davis and Figueroa, right, won the flyweight championship, then lost it, right? Then won it again, right? Like, yeah, like John Jones, technically, you could call him 15, 16 time UFC light heavyweight champion, right? But Davis and Figueroa lost the belt and then won it again, made the weight and won it again. And he is the first prelim of the night, and if you ask Davison, he's honored to be competing at UFC 300.
There you go. Don't everyone's gonna stop, relax about card placement. It's not the worst freaking conversation to have. Once in a while, maybe, but
well, for me
situation.
It's tough because like I defend Bo Nickel kicking off the pay-per-view, and it's like, oh, he's a fucking shill, they cut his check. And no, right? Like, if you listen to the totality of this interview, right, like I've said things like Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje, I love the fight, but I'd like both those guys to be fighting for the undisputed title, right? So, you know, that might not be complete promotional alignment, you know, but Bo Nickel, that guy should never fucking fight on a prelim in his life as far as I'm concerned.
I don't hate that, John. Maybe, I guess we're on an island, but I think I have no issue with anything you just said there. It's not the end of the world. It's fine. It's all good. I do have a little bit of an issue. If there's one card placement issue I have, it's Jim Miller being on ESPN. Because now we don't get it. We're not going to get it. The Jim effing Miller.
Well, you are correct. Bruce Buffer and I got a text from our boss, Zach Candido, if you want to call that breaking news. That because we're on ESPN, yeah, there will be no Jim fucking Miller there. But there are a lot of opportunities over the course of the weekend. for you to potentially hear Jim fucking Miller. My question for my bosses is probably going to be, hey, at the morning weigh-in, when I'm off camera and Jim comes up, can I say official weight 156 pounds for Jim fucking Miller? You know, I don't see a huge problem with that, but I don't know in this case. I think in this case, we're going to ask for permission and not forgiveness, and we'll see what the answer is. But I'll be off camera, and it'll only be the people in the room, in theory, who would hear me. So maybe we'll just go fucking rogue. We'll see.
I freaking love it, dude. I love that. Low-key banger on this card. I know it's hard to choose. There's nothing really low-key on it, but...
Yeah, there's nothing low-key about this, Mike. You're low-key, right? I mean... You asking the fight that I'm least interested in? I mean, what are we doing here?
No, I mean, we talked about all the big storylines, but what's the sneaky? Again, nothing really sneaky, but I mean, sneak use of Diego Lopez is
that was
kind
was
of weird
say.
One to look at.
So I think Diego Lopez could very well bring out the best in Sadiq Youssef and vice versa. What an absolute war, right? Again, man, just you're making me nervous. Really excited to see Kayla Harrison at the weigh-in. That's what's so great, too, about these UFC pay-per-views, right? The fight before the fight, the sporting event before the pay-per-view, right? To see Kayla Harrison. To my knowledge, my research to this point, she's never weighed this as a professional, you know, and she hasn't fought at featherweight since 2020. So wouldn't put it past her. If any athlete shouldn't be doubted, it's her. But that's fascinating to me, seeing Aljo all yoked at 45. I mean, the featured prelim, you know, nobody's talking about Yuri Prohazka and Alexander Rokic. So,
yeah,
it's insane.
That might be the answer. That might be the answer is Rokic.
The question for me should probably be, do you think you'll ever be assigned a better fight card top to bottom? Because history is going to reflect very fondly upon UFC 300. And this is going to be the fight card upon which all future cards are judged. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at UFC 350, you know, if I'm still around, you know, people being like, how does this compare to 300? And I bet it will compare poorly to the, to this fucking thing that we're looking at right now.
I mean, I don't know what else we could say, John. I mean, I really don't know what else we could say. This card is so good. I'm not even going to jinx it with too much positivity here because I want everything to remain intact. I am going to give a little drum on the wood here. Everything has been great. I woke my dog up. He's barking. But John, you are the man. Safe travels to Las Vegas. UFC 300. Excited to hear you, Joe, and DC just rattle this thing off. And by the way, real quick, do you think we're going to get a different canvas for this one after rewatching 200? What do you think? I don't know if you've been told anything or not, but do you feel like we're going to get normal canvas and let the fighters and the card kind of just make it as colorful as possible? Or do you think we're going to get something a little special in there?
So I absolutely love the decision to go with yellow or gold at UFC 200. I believe the boss man, Craig Borsari, didn't think the tone of that yellow was perfect. So I would love to see a gold canvas for UFC 300 or something special. Maybe you go white, you know, harkening back to some of the other promotions like Dream and Pride. I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing like a total whiteout. But I have no information on that front, right? We try to stay in our lane, try to keep our head down. And, you know, I'm going to go prep Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez right now. So, you know, but I would go white canvas if it were up to me, Craig.
I'm with you.
Sorry, and Zach, I would go white canvas.
I'm with you. John, appreciate you as always. Enjoy 300. I mean, I may not see you in Vegas, but I'll say it anyways. I'll see you in Las Vegas later on this week.
All right, buddy. Travel safe. Thank you.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.